I bring you a short reading today from a book that everybody is made to read in high school where I come from. It's called The Leopard. It's set during the annexation of Sicily to the new formed Kingdom of Italy in 1860. Italy is not that old. I mean, parts of it are ancient, but the unification is only 150 years old. Sicily used to be part of the reign of Spain before unification. In the scene that I'm reading from, which is a very long one, and I wanted to translate the whole thing, but it's just, there is not enough time. I'm gonna give you two snippets. The protagonist, Prince Fabrice, a nobleman from the old guard, from the Spanish, has been talking to Chevalier, the northerner that has been sent by the King of Italy to offer this old guard nobleman a seat in the Senate of the newly formed national parliament. Prince Fabrice is reluctant to accept, as he does not understand how this should work and how things would be any different and better in this new regime than they had been in the past. He has been bemoaning that the North has already done things without asking in Sicily, things he is not sure were well done, and now, after all is said and done, they're asking him to be a senator to rubber stamp the actions of these new conquerors. So he says, "We are old, Chevalier," and he's talking about the whole island, not just himself. "We are ancient. For the last 25 centuries, we have borne the weight of these magnificent heterogeneous civilizations. They all came from somewhere else already fully formed. We didn't create them. None of them sprung from us. We are as white as you are, Chevalier, as white as the Queen of England, and yet, for the last 2,500 years, we've been a colony. Don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining. All this is in great part our fault, but we're all tired now." After a while, continues, "I admit that some Sicilians, if they leave the island, could overcome their fatalistic tendencies, but they must leave when they're very young. Leaving after 20 is already too late. They will have formed a crust and a belief that their country of origin is normal, and places abroad are strange." How shall we live our lives then? I'm going to tell you a story in three vignettes. An August afternoon in Sicily, a lifetime ago, I'm sitting on a porch swing, sipping iced tea, talking to my friend about what, probably boys or music and boys. We're in high school. What else do we have to talk about, really? I remember the palm trees overhead, the sweet and salty smell of the beach not that far away, the lemony taste of the tea. An easy afternoon like many others. Did I walk home? Did my mom pick me up? Did I stay for dinner? I don't remember. What I do remember, though, is another morning. I remember the news from the radio. My friend's dad, a forensic pathologist, was shot by a mafia assassin who had not appreciated the honest opinion that this father of three, a respected doctor in the community, had given in regards to some fingerprints. Paolo Giacone, August 11th, 1982. Oops. We eat dinner late in Sicily, like 9:30, 10 o'clock late. My family used to enjoy eating outside on the patio, especially in those days before air conditioning was everywhere. We would take advantage of the evening's breeze. The news came shortly after dinner. None of us personally knew General Della Chiesa or his wife, but there had been great hope that this excellent and multi-decorated military man who was able to defeat the terrorist group, the Red Brigades, could help with the latest outbreak of violence that targeted the magistrates and police investigating Cosa Nostra. Instead, on this night, late summer evening, he had been gunned down by a band of thugs with AK-47s on his way to a restaurant. A few days following their murder, a peaceful candle-lit march was organized. On a wall near the place where the general, his wife, and their bodyguard had died, someone had written, "Here dies the hope of all honest citizens of Palermo." Carlo Alberto Dalla Chiesa, Emanuela Setti Carraro, and Domenico Russo, September 3rd, 1982. "My dad picks me up at the airport. We have to go through there," he says. "From the car window, I see a lunar landscape pass me by. That's where the highway used to be. Now it's all broken bits of road, rocks, red dust. It is late spring of 1992, and a few days before my arrival on this same stretch of highway, a half ton of explosive was placed in a culvert below and detonated. As Giovanni Falcone, the most successful prosecuting magistrate who had been fighting the mafia, his wife, and three police officers were passing over it. They say he did not die immediately. Overwhelmed by the magnitude of the hole in the ground and by what had happened, I try to look away, but there is nowhere else to look. Giovanni Falcone, Francesca Morvillo, Rocco Di Cillo, Antonio Montinaro, and Vito Schifani, 23 May, 1992. So I grew up in Palermo, Sicily, and during what one would call my formative years, a period of about 8 to 10, the number of murders committed by the mafia was over 60. This is the number of law-abiding, innocent men, women, and yes, children too, who were killed. If we include the mafia wars proper, where the crime families killed each other, then the total would be over 200. My family knew a few of the magistrates, policemen, lawmakers, and clergy murdered, either personally or through family members. And even those we did not know directly, someone we knew probably worked with a relative, went to school with a child, had a cousin. Palermo is not that big. I mean, it's big, but yeah. And you do get to know who the actors are on the other side, too. Maybe not personally, but you know. But more than knowing the people in the mafia, you see what they do. You see their actions. As I grew up, it seemed to me that in Sicily, because of the diffuse actions of organized crime, we were deprived of what other people, say, in Sweden or northern Italy or here, don't even have to think twice about. Like what? Like having the trash removed on a reliable basis. Like being able to get a job on your own merits. Right and wrong can start looking like distant concepts. And in all that distance, they may appear blurred. Moral ambiguity was surrounding me like a dense fog, and I was having a hard time seeing the road ahead. Of course, the people, we were fed up. We marched in the streets. Some of us hung sheets from their windows with writing that said, "Basta, enough." But to my impressionable young mind, it did not seem enough. I thought, if all good people in the end get bested by organized crime, marching is not really helping anyone. Especially not those who are dead. When the opportunity came for me to study abroad, I took it largely for the chance to learn more and better things. But I can't lie, there was also a welcome sense of starting over in a place where maybe things aren't so systemically bad. I really wanted nothing to do with my native land. However, I had not considered the other side of leaving a place, which is arriving at another place where you are the new person. A person from far away is always interesting, and their presence raises many questions. These questions are always well-intentioned, well-meaning, asked by friendly, nice people. But then they inevitably end up going in the same place. Where are you from? At this point, I always experience an internal struggle between the part of me who knows where this is headed and which wants nothing to do with the conversation, and the part of me that can't lie. Where am I from? Well, the voice inside me says, Armenia. Let's try Armenia this time. Quebec, that's possible. We almost sound French Canadian. Come on, this one time, what are they gonna know? Lie! But I always end up replying, I'm from Italy. And if I'm lucky, this ends here. If I am not lucky, my new friend will say, ah, Italy, where in Italy? Half of myself will say Florence. They're not gonna know. It's a beautiful place. Come on, this one time. And again, I can't lie. So I end up saying, I'm from Palermo, Sicily, while I brace myself for the inevitable follow-up. Ah, Sicily, do you know anybody in the mafia? This question arrives possibly 4 out of 5 times. And by the way, I'm not blaming the asker. It's all on me. Because despite having heard it many, many, many times, I really still don't know what to say. And in part, my reluctance is due to having to explain away some stereotype that has been Hollywood sanctioned. So, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie is a Nigerian author and a MacArthur Genius Grant holder. And you may know her because if you like Beyoncé, her words have been sampled in the song Flawless. And she has numerous TED Talks, and one of them out there is called The Danger of a Single Story. And she said this quote that I think perfectly encapsulates how I feel. She says, the problem with stereotypes is not that they're untrue, but that they are incomplete. They make one story become the only story. So we all know what we're talking about. In my case, we're talking about, you know, Marlon Brando or Al Pacino or Robert De Niro, heck, Joe Pesci. We already have this idea of power and glamour and fascination. And so I'm pretty sure that this is what most people want to ask me when they want to know if I know someone, some of them. Well, I don't know anybody personally. I've never actually had even an acquaintance with them. But I've seen them. I've seen mafia bosses. And you can see them too on YouTube. And they have none of the projected allure and power of these characters in the movies. I did see these criminals during the Mafia Maxi trial in the 1980s. My mom took me to it. And it's on YouTube. All of those I've seen were behind bars, and they looked like ordinary old people. The Mafia was never about honor or loyalty or family, or least of all about caring for others. Ever since the beginning, it has always been at best about protection racketeering. At worst, well, it is about corrupting the power of the law and blowing up people in highways. All of these men behind bars that I saw had been in hiding 20, 30, or 40 years before being captured, because no one can lead a normal life when one is the head of a crime family. Even a normal life is portrayed in the movies, even Goodfellas. So they look ordinary and at the same time scary. That's it. That's what you see. To be honest, when I get the inevitable mafia question, I often hesitate also because I do want to change the stereotype. I do not want to fall in those. I want to say this is not me. This is not the majority of people I know. Please don't define us by one bad trait that you happen to know about. Try to understand my heritage is way more complex than that. And if the mafia is all you can think of us, then try to forgive my provenance. See me as just another person. Life is beautiful and it's ugly, and it's different and it's the same everywhere. That is what I would like to say, but haven't quite been able to up until now. And I'm a little bit, more than just a little bit, I'm quite disappointed with myself for all these years of looking away or trying to look away. I wish I could have been braver and more proud of my heritage. I wish I would have answered better. I wish I could have contributed more to show the good and not the bad. I've chosen a topic today that it's still difficult for me to discuss. And I've chosen it because I think it might be useful. You see, I've been thinking about the parallels between the situation I've lived in Sicily in my youth and some of the things happening here in Ferguson, New York, in the United States. Like how hard it is to overcome stereotypes. Like how systemic racism and organized crime are things that can pervade one's entire existence without one realizing how much they have taken over one's life. Like the fact that people somehow always have to die in the struggle for freedom from something deeply rooted. Like how when you start organizing for change, difficult and unpleasant things start happening, but they also open up possibilities. It's a different world, but I wanted to offer maybe a positive point of view. I wanted to say it gets better. I use my experience to shed light and perhaps offer hope. So I was looking for an angle, but for a while I couldn't find anything. It all felt hollow. It's not so much that I was being insincere. It's that I had some feeling of unease, and it kept creeping up while I was writing or thinking about all this. I just couldn't put my hands around it. It was some sort of an existential fear. Like when you wake from a nightmare, but you can't remember what the nightmare was about, something like that. It was as if I was afraid of finding the right words. Carl Jung describes the shadow as the part of our personality unknown and perhaps unwanted by our conscious selves. At the individual level, it often contains what we would call our dark side. The example that is always given about the personal shadow is meeting someone and thinking, oh, I can't stand them, even though we don't know them very well. That is an indication that at some point, at some unconscious level, we have seen our shadow projected onto them and we reject it after we recognize. And so we end up rejecting the person. But for our mental well-being and to gain a sense of wholeness, we must look at our shadow. There is an aspect of creativity inside the shadow too. Letting the shadow come out into the light might also bring out these creative forces. And besides, shining a light on the shadow helps to make the world a little bit brighter. Oh, so they say. But wait, there is more. The shadow extends also to the collective unconscious. Taken collectively, the shadow is that part of humanity or a community that makes us otherize the other, that makes us take sides, that makes us intolerant and fixed in our beliefs. Us against them. And humanity or society or community needs to confront their shadow too and bring it out so that the real transformation can happen. Somehow, thinking about it, this resonated with me. I see now what's hard for me to say. The reason I feel disappointed with and unable to speak of where I come from. Because being from the same place as many of the criminals I've discussed, I've been afraid to look inside me to see if I shared any commonality and if I shared any of that dark side with that group that does something so reprehensible. I am not them. So I distanced myself from it. I looked away without looking back or inward, because the thought that I could be made of the same material as them was unbearable. But here's the thing. Any transformation that I could have had or I could have helped initiate, any hope of change comes from looking at our shadow. By turning away from looking at my own and at the shadow of where I'm from, I closed off the possibility of doing something. What I'd been missing from my reasoning was the element of choice. Yes, we all have a shadow. We're all potentially both good and bad. It doesn't mean that we're all destined to be criminals or we're all angels. I can choose to commit unspeakable crimes, or I can say enough. I can revel in the carefully crafted cocoon of my privilege, or I can be an ally. I have this ability, and so does everybody else. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, cowardice asks the question, is it safe? Expediency asks the question, is it politic? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right? And there comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe nor politic nor popular, but one must take it because one's conscience tells one that it is right. And it follows that when the conscience speaks, change is possible. Now I understand this and I offer it as a possibility. We can all choose to change things, no matter where we're from or the history. When we choose to look, when we choose to help, when we choose according to our conscience, we must choose, and we must choose every day. Day after day after day. That is what makes change happen. It's been more than 30 years since my friend's dad died. It's been more than 20 years since the half ton of explosive was detonated on the highway. It has been 8 years since they captured the guy who ordered most of these murders. So how are things today in Sicily? I wish I could give a glowing report and say it's all well and the mafia is gone. It is not. Change never happens at the expected speed. And yet, I see many signs that changes that are taking root today that started back in the 80s with the peaceful marching, in the 90s with the sheets on the windows that said enough. The mindset of people, especially those younger than me, is changing. That's huge. And this mindset is giving life This new different mindset is giving life to new creative ways of fighting protection racketeering, narco-trafficking, and other ills of society. Not perfect, but ongoing. Change is not only possible, but it is happening. I want to close today with the words of a priest, Father Pino Puglisi, yet another victim of the mafia whose conscience told him to say what he knew was right. His words: "We want to be able to say, since there is nothing here, we roll up our sleeves and do something. And if each of us does something, a lot will get done." May it be so.